On September 2nd, it was 75 years since the end of World War II. And I heard on the news, somebody was interviewed. They interviewed a man who wrote a book about, the name of the book is Major, a Dog Soldier. It's a book about a dog. See, for me to speak about dogs is not usual, but in honor of Rosh Hashanah, I decided to take the new resolution is to be a little more welcoming and loving for dogs. Then I decided to start to learn a little bit about it. You see, World War II, when World War II broke out, America was involved in two fronts. On one end it was Japan on one end and Germany on the other side. And somebody said that they need dogs for the war, because using dogs for in armies is something that's done for thousands of years. They saved many lives throughout history of soldiers. But America, when World War II broke out, did not have one dog. They did not have a program. The army did not have anything to do, anything to, they knew nothing about how to use dogs for the war. Then they came out with a calling to the American people. It's called Dog for Defense. They wanted to have dogs. They invited people to donate their dogs for the American, for the war. And they promised them that when the dog will be, when the war will be over, they will bring the dogs back to the owners. The book is written about a little boy, then a little boy with the name Sid Moore. He was 5 years old. He lived in North Dakota, and he had a dog, and his father suggested he should donate the dog to the army. He's now 80 years old. He lives in Ohio somewhere. And when he was interviewed, he said he still remembers the day that they came to pick up the dog. Says an army truck pulled up, and a few soldiers jumped out, and they said, "Boy, you have 3 minutes, we have to run. Say goodbye to your dog and let's go." They tried to pick up the dog and to put him in the truck, but the dog didn't want to go, and he beat one of the soldiers. Then his father said, Sid's father said, "Let the boy climb into the truck and the dog will go after him." And that's exactly what happened. He climbed to the truck, the dog was after him. He hugged the dog strongly, and then somebody reached out and picked up the boy and pulled him out of the truck and slammed the door. He says he still remembers the pain of the separation. American people donated 20,000 dogs to the army. They established 5 training centers in the United States, in different places in the United States, to train the dogs. They got all kinds of dogs, all sizes, all types, everything, small, big, everything. And it was in one time could be in a training center, 2,000 dogs. And they know nothing about training dogs. And they needed to train them to scout, to discover landmines, to be able to figure out if the soldier is sick or is dead, if they can save him, to carry things, many things. Took a long time to train them. And at that time, they discovered how to train dogs. And as the guy said, that became the genesis of dog training. That they learned 2 important tools. Number one, then a dog needs to have one owner. One person has to tell him what to do. He cannot have too many people tell him what to do. He has to get orders from one person. But number two, the more important thing, that don't train the dog to be scared of you, to do things because of fear, because you'll starve him, because you will beat them or something like this, physical punishment. Because then, if it's from fear, when he's doing it, when push comes to shove, he freezes, and he doesn't know what to do. He's not sure. He might be punished for this or for this. The right way to train him is out of love. He should do for you. He should love them. He should reward them. And then he will do anything for you. They send these dogs to anywhere in the world there were American soldiers. And they saved many, many lives. When the war was over, the army made a commitment to bring the dogs back to the United States. And the dogs who survived or didn't die from the war or from diseases were brought back to the United States, but then they couldn't just give them back to the owners. They had to detrain them. They had to send them back to the training centers to detrain them from being, they were much more aggressive during the war, and to be pets, to be their own bodies, they needed to be much more kind. Some dogs could not be detrained. They had no choice, they had to put them to sleep. Others, they looked for the owners. Many times the owners died. The army put a lot of effort and money to find the right owners. One of the lucky ones who got the dog back was this Sid Moore. And he says when the dog came back, he was loving and hugging. He didn't hold a grudge. He says he had a problem. He felt ashamed from the dog that he gave him up, so to speak, that he betrayed him, that he gave him to the army, to the war. Now, the person who wrote the book, the author, says he wrote the book from the viewpoint of the dog, how a dog experienced the war. And yet for this to do a lot of research, and he said something simple but interesting, said by a dog, the smell is the strongest sense that a dog has. And then it comes the hearing, then the sight. Seeing is the lowest barrier. It's smell, hearing, and seeing. By human being, it's just the opposite. You see the strongest sense by you is sight, then hearing, and then smelling. Then it was a whole job for him to find out, to try to get into the dog's mind and to write his experience from the experience of the dog during the war. You see, the Baal Shem Tov says that from everything that a person hears or sees, he has to learn a lesson in serving God. And when I heard this story about this dog, I was thinking to myself, what can I learn from it? Especially during COVID-19, in the beginning, many people were afraid of the dogs. They were afraid maybe the dogs spread the disease. A few weeks later, when they discovered that the dogs do not carry the disease and don't spread it, it became just the opposite. People wanted more dogs. All the shelters, the dog shelters, were cleaned up. People adopted dogs, were looking for more. It became in America today that to have one dog in a family is an obligation. Two dogs is optional. Three dogs is showing off. Then if there is so much dog going on in the world, obviously there is a message for us to learn something from them. Number one, what you can learn from the dogs is, the dog came back after 4 years of being in the war. He didn't hold any grudge. Was not angry with the boy who gave him up. He was okay with it. You know, people go around in life with grudges. Grudges on other people that are angry. Somebody insulted them 35 years ago, he still goes around with the grudge. Grudges with God. The year was not so good. Oh, I used to go to synagogue, but now I'm so upset. Why God did it to me? I did all the right thing. Why is this happening to me? And the people who kept a certain meat say, oh, I used to keep kosher. Since I got divorced, I don't keep kosher anymore. I'm angry. People go around with grudges. So much grudges going on. So much on you, on the person who is carrying it. It's such a burden. Maybe we can learn something from the dog. It's not because he forgets, because he doesn't keep grudges. Move on. Let's move on. Let's make up with people, with God, and move on. Number two, the second lesson we can learn from dogs is how they train dogs. They train the dogs, they set two rules. It needs to have one owner, one person he listens to, and he's, so to speak, obeying him. But the second lesson, the second thing is, you have to train them out of love. You know, on Rosh Hashanah, as the cantors were singing here a minute ago beautifully, they were singing Avinu Malkeinu, the most famous prayer on Rosh Hashanah. Avinu means our father. Malkeinu means our king. What does this mean? There are two types of relationships between us and God. There is Avinu, our father, a loving father, a loving relationship, a parent and a child. Cannot be a parent that do anything for his child. On the other end, what is Malkeinu, our king? A king in subjects. That's if the king tells you something to do, you better do it. That's more a fearful relationship. Oh, fear, respect. Then we have a relationship, we have the two types of relationships, love and fear. Many times people ask, why you need both of them? Why is one not enough? Why is not enough of, you know, why is not enough loving? If I love God, I'll do anything for him. Why we need the fear component, the awe, the respect. But I used to tell many times to people, especially to men, I tell them, you love your wife, right? But you still need to fear her. Loving is not enough. Why in a relationship with your wife is not enough loving enough? Because you might decide, I decided what's good for her. Because I love her, I think she should do this and we'll buy this and we'll do this. And she tells you, don't tell me what's good for me. Respect my wishes. You need the fear aspect in the relationship. And respect my wishes, respect my space. Don't tell me what out of your love what is good for me. The same thing is with God. Sometimes we are so excited about doing a mitzvah. For example, tomorrow, Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah happens to be on Shabbat. We don't blow the shofar. Then I'm sorry to tell you, but if you want to hear the shofar, you have to come Sunday again to services. On Shabbat, we don't blow the shofar. Then somebody will say, I love the mitzvah so much. I want to blow the shofar. For this, you need the respect and fear and know aspect in the relationship. God says you cannot blow the shofar. You don't blow the shofar, even if you love the mitzvah. You don't do something for God that he doesn't want to. But within the two relationships, we see the word Avinu is written before Malkeinu. Our father is before our king. It means to say the loving relationship is even more important, is number one. Because ultimately, you want that the relationship with God should be based on love. You know, in America, I hear so often the word, I felt guilty, I came to services. I felt guilty, I did this. I felt guilty. I never heard that in Israel. Nobody feels guilty in Israel. I never heard it from a Russian, a Jewish Hashanim again, that he feels guilty. Nobody feels guilty in Russia. It's an American thing, you feel guilty. The problem with feeling guilty, it's good for a little bit. But for in the long run, people eventually stop to feel guilty. And they don't do it. The right way to build up a relationship with God, to ensure a relationship with God, has to be based on love. Don't worry, I know how to guilt people into doing things very well. But ultimately, this is not the way to do it. The engine for a relationship with God must be based on love. My grandfather, my mother, my mother just told me the story. One year, my grandfather did not have a lulav and a etrog in Russia. He told my mother was a little girl, she was the oldest. There were three little girls in the house. He told them he's going to the next city, closest 2-hour walk on the first day of Yom Tov and Sukkot to say the blessing over the lulav. Then in 4 hours, 4.5 hours, I'll be back. He walked 2 hours, he said the blessing, they're waiting for him. He shows up back home with a lulav and etrog. He said, what is this? He says, I borrowed the lulav and etrog from this guy to bring it to you guys, to the children. They should see a lulav and etrog. and should say the blessing. There were three little girls. They are not obligated. They are before bat mitzvah. They don't have to do it. But he wanted them to make sure. He said, he used to say, I don't know what's going to be tomorrow in Russia. Maybe they'll take me away. They'll arrest me. You'll never see me again. I wanted to make sure you know what a lulav is. And he went back for another 4 hours to walk back, to bring the lulav, the etrog, back to this man and to come back home. He walked that day 8 hours. This kind of behavior is not made out of fear, out of guilt. This is only out of love to God. This kind of, the real way to do it is when you love the mitzvah, you love Judaism, you love Jews, you want to be a part of it, and then you do anything for God, for Judaism. And the last lesson we can learn from the dogs, the best sense is smell. You know the expression, it doesn't smell right? It doesn't mean physically it doesn't smell right. It just, you want to, let's say it's a business deal. It looks on paper very well. The presentation is good. Everybody likes it. But something about that doesn't feel right. And you say it doesn't smell right. Your intuition tells you that's not the right thing. In Judaism, it's time to develop a Jewish sense of smell. When you see something, you should be able to have your right intuition if it's something that Judaism approves of or not. If it's something that God will be happy with you, your grandparents will be happy with you or not. And that's what we need to develop, a sense of smell. There is a story about a lady came to the rabbi with a chicken. In the olden days, they slaughtered the chicken, but you need to open it to see if it's kosher, and it was a question. The rabbi is checking the chicken, looking and looking. Meanwhile, his wife, the rabbitson, comes out from the kitchen. She looks at the chicken. She tells the rabbi, it might be kosher, but it stinks. You know, sometimes something is kosher, but it stinks. We need to develop a sense of smell that we know when it's Jewishly appropriate. Intuition, intuitively, you know if it's the right thing to do. It's written when Moshiach will come, he will judge people, and he will by the smell. Written is one of his signs to know if it's Moshiach, if he was able to judge, not by witnesses, not by interrogations, but he will have this intuition to know if the person is righteous or not, if he's right or wrong, and so on. To deserve the coming of Moshiach, you see, the sense of smell, it's written in Kabbalah, is the closest sense in our body that connected to the soul. You connect, the more you connect to your soul, the more you develop your sense of smell. When we will develop our Jewish sense of smell, we'll deserve the coming of Moshiach in God willing in this year, and we will have all of us a good and blessed year. We are now going to close the Zoom and all the microphones, and we will start our holiday service. Looking forward to see all of you during the holiday. Good Yom Tov.